Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
This is Julio Rodriguez, and this is the Lookout Landing Podcast.
Smoking Joe Frazier, the Hellraiser, raising hell with the flavor. Terrorize the jam like troops in Pakistan, swinging through your town like your neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another brand new episode of the Lookout Landing Podcast. My name is Matthew Robertson. It always has been and it always will be. I just forget to say that at the beginning of some episodes, so I need to remind you periodically. You can find me on Twitter at mroberson22. And today I'm joined by the boss lady of Lookout Landing, Kate Prusser, here to talk about all things Mariners and Astros. Kate, what is going on in your life?
Not a lot. I'm sick, so pardon me if I'm caught. I will try to mute myself out if I have a coughing fit during this episode. But yeah, I've been treating it. I use my secret weapon, which, do you know about the medicine ball at Starbucks?
Whoa, no, Starbucks getting in the medicine game now? I had no idea.
It's a secret menu item, but if you go to any Starbucks, they know what it is. They call it the medicine ball. It's like green tea, maybe. It's two of the different tea flavors mixed together, and then like steamed lemonade and honey. So, I don't know. I don't know what makes it magical, but it just feels 100% better after you have one. So it's usually my kind of go-to sickness cure. It has not been working this time around because whatever is going around is real rough. But yes, that's my life hack, my gift from me to you. When you're feeling ill, go to Starbucks and order the medicine ball.
Good to know. And less than 2 minutes in, already trying to angle towards a sponsorship. Great work. Incredible.
Well, you know, now that we've got ads on the pod, which thank you for putting up with those listeners. It does help fund our activities here at LL. So
yes. Yes, it sure does. I feel like we've always, like, I've had episodes in the past where John has been like, oh, I'm also sick. And I feel like you've had this too. We've had a lot of, like, people really fighting through adversity for the people to give them the content they so deserve. So never forget that, people at home, when you're listening to this podcast, that sometimes we're playing through injuries, you know?
Yeah, we're playing hurt.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's a difference between hurt and injured.
Service journalism.
Totally, totally.
Podcastism, whatever.
Podcastivism, I think. Podcastivism. Is the word. Speaking of podcastivism, we have another loyal subject, John Troopin, who is apparently going to join us perhaps midway through. We have no idea what the timing of that will be, but John will just kind of magically pop up in here at some point, I think. But we are gathered today to discuss mainly the Houston Astros. We've written, I think it was John who wrote something for the site about everything that happened. If you need to refresh yourself or if you just missed it. Somehow, the Astros are cheating. They've been cheating. It's out there now. They said the quiet part real loud, and it's public information, which is hilarious, but also somewhat serious. Obviously, like, it is a bummer that they got to where they were partially through doing things that are illegal. So we are going to talk about that. We got a lot of questions from you guys on Twitter, so thank you so much for sending in your thoughts. We'll try to get to as many of them as possible. But before we get into that, since this is ostensibly a Seattle Mariners podcast, we thought we should talk about the team a little bit. There's not really news per se, but some of your questions were about the Mariners, so we thought that the least we could do is talk about the team that this website was created for. Does that sound okay with you, Kate?
It does. It is not usually our MO to kind of discuss other teams, for sure, and like especially the Astros, I think. Not somebody I love to spend a ton of time thinking about. Although, if you were interested in hearing about how our off-season, our AL West rivals did this off-season, we just completed a series on looking at the off-season for each of the various teams in the AL West and trying to kind of forecast forward, looking at where they're going to be in the future. So, it's called the Threat Assessment, the AL West Threat Assessment Series. You can find that on the website. But basically, like, the Astros broke baseball in, like, a bad way. Not the fun Julio Rodriguez kind of way. Like a bad baseball lost its mind for a couple of days there. Which was fun because it's always fun to have baseball be part of the national conversation, which it's not always. But also just, it was just kind of, so we have to address those things, I think. It's weird too, though, that like normally we're used to a certain amount of activity in the off season, by a very active general manager. That has just not been the case this off season. It's been Matthew.
Yeah.
Am I right to say boring?
I think boring for the Mariners for sure. I mean, it depends how you feel about Kendall Graveman and Carl Edwards Jr., who I do forget are on the team all the time. But I would say, I mean, definitely compared to last season, this is child's play for Jerry. But I think it also makes sense. I mean, like, it's not the time to just throw money around and go crazy for win now, guys. So it's definitely boring, but I think it's a prudent kind of boring, you know?
It is wild to, especially last season. Last season, obviously, we had like the Cano blockbuster, bringing in Kelnick and Dunn, and a few other big moves. The J.P. Crawford, you know, there were big and small moves last year going on. Now that things have kind of sufficiently been blown up, there were very minimal moves left for them to make. That's not to say that there are not a few things I would like to see them do. John, who just joined us, I think. Hello, John.
Hello. There are indeed a few moves, go on, that I would like them to do.
Yeah, so John just wrote a piece. Again, I feel like I'm plugging the site a lot here, but we have been doing this.
We do have it, right? It is there.
Yes. So John wrote probably the most, the thing I'm most interested in seeing them do with the remainder of this offseason is bring back Taiwan Walker, right? Like, such a win. Win for fans. Great person, really a good buy low candidate. You know, just you're not spending any money. Pay Ty what he wants, bring him back.
And fits what they need, because they have a bunch of pitchers who they need to pitch, but a bunch of them who don't necessarily have like a 180 inning track record. Right. So you're going to have to sort of skip some starts and shuffle things around, and that's what Taiwan could use.
Yeah, that's our friend Kendall Graveman, who we mentioned just briefly. I feel like we've all forgotten about Kendall Graveman, right? Did you forget about Kendall Graveman, Matthew?
Not really, because he to me is in that realm of like, oh, he's so forgettable that he's memorable. Does that make sense? Like, he's such
you have a constant like flashlight shining on him, because otherwise you will lose track of him.
Yeah, and I think it was just so unlike what we've seen from last offseason, where it's like, oh, they just signed like a guy. Like, this was like, we just got Kendall Graveman. Like, it's kind of like, I don't want to say funny because that seems disrespectful, but like, it is just so blah that it's kind of memorable for me. Like, I keep forgetting about Carl Edwards Jr., who is more exciting, I think. Like, he at least has more like potential. I think he could be a closer if everything goes well for him. But,
well, and we've all seen, I mean, my big memory of Carl Edwards Jr. is seeing him with the Cubs on the World Series run, right? Like, you know, he has marquee moments that Kendall Graveman just... My memories of him are, like, mostly him kind of getting shelled by the Mariners.
By the Mariners, yeah.
Yeah.
If Kendall Graveman was a piece of IKEA furniture, Matthew, what piece of IKEA furniture is he?
Well, this is, I guess, the time for a confession. I have never been to IKEA in my entire life.
What?
Yeah, never done it.
Where's your furniture from?
Well, I mean, okay, it's important to remember...
You lived in the suburbs!
...that I am a child... Yeah, I did grow up in the suburbs, but I wasn't, like, buying furniture. Like, I don't know.
I'm You're sure a there's... child. Do you have, like, a holly hobby? Like,
No. It's just I'm still 1,000% at the age where,
do you sleep in a race car bed, Matthew?
I do sleep in a race car bed. Thank you very much.
We had to cut a lot of Jeff Gordon content from Matthews.
I'm still totally at the age where, like, free couches are a big part of my life. Like, the couches in my apartment now were from my roommate's parents. Like, in college, we didn't buy any couches. They were just free or given to us. So I'm sure there's been IKEA stuff in my life. I just have never purchased it myself. And I'm also totally the kind of guy who would rather pay more for it to come assembled and do it on my own, because I'm bad at assembling things.
Wow.
You asked a question. I wasn't going to lie to the people and make
I appreciate that.
IKEA thing. I also have a long-standing beef with Sweden, so that's part of it.
What?
Mm-hmm.
What's a beef with Sweden?
Yep, not on Spotify. Robin's cool. Me and Robin are homies, but everything else, like Sweden, is on my bad list.
We just learn so much about each other every day. Well, anyway, I was going to say, like, Kendall Graveman is some kind of, like, the end table that's, like, basically just a square and, like, four little legs. You know, it's, like, I don't know, 3 ounces of particle board or whatever. Like, it's perfectly serviceable. It's not good, but it's perfectly serviceable. And, you know, when you have a dinner party or something, you're suddenly really happy for it. But that was where I was going with that. Just a very dull off-season edition.
Yeah, that seems right. Kendall End Table Graveman, we'll call him that. Really rolls off the tongue.
The blot. He's a blot.
Yeah.
I have no idea if that's actually what
it's I've seen a lot of the back of Kendall Graveman's head, and I did just, like, go to his BREF page, and I'd never seen this man's face in my life before. It's like, he's always, you know, he'd be pitching against the Mariners all the time, like you guys said. I think I just blurred his face out.
I think he's Sonny Gray. I think he has Sonny Gray's face, but it's not that Sonny Gray's face. It's not Kendall Gray.
Kind of has Sonny Gray's face. I thought he had long hair.
No.
For
no,
some
no,
reason.
Not.
No. Who's the A's? Whatever. He's fine. I fully agree that they should at least sign Taiwan, and it's the like last move that I'm really expecting them to make, because the only other moves they have to make are, like, massive trades, which
right.
would severely impact things, and that could be fun, but,
you know, yeah, what it, are we feeling like? Do we feel like there's a possibility, because we've seen it floated a bunch of times, what do we feel like the current potential for a Kyle Seager trade is?
I'm just to kind of
set the scene, you know, obviously Donaldson signed. The Braves, I think, Braves fans seem to be expecting to get Donaldson. And there was a lot of hurt feelings on Braves Twitter, I feel, that I saw when Donaldson eventually signed with the Twins, who really opened their pocketbooks in a way that I don't think we've seen them.
The biggest free agent signing in their history, beating out Irvin Santana. So, yeah.
Smell baseball.
I'm pretty sure Irvin Santana follows me on Twitter. He's
one
of those people
does.
Who follows
me. I mean,
like,
I don't know for sure, but I can say for sure he does.
He's doing the Joey Bats thing where he follows as many people as possible. Like, if you've ever tweeted the word baseball, he follows you.
Yeah. I appreciate the reminder. Maybe it's his people and Joey Bats' people are the same people, but I appreciate the reminder to smell baseball once in a while.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say it's, like, remotely approaching 50%, because there's just such a good chance people don't get traded. But, like, I came into this winter assuming there was no chance he got dealt, and I now am thinking there is a, like, solid chance he gets moved, if depending on what happens with Chris Bryant's arbitration, which is a really annoying thing to have so much hinging on. But that will sort of determine, I think, whether the Braves are willing to trade for Chris Bryant.
Right.
Only a couple. I mean, the Rangers, the Braves, and the if the Cubs trade, you know, Chris Bryant, the Cubs all really need third basemen, and there's not going to be enough. So Kyle Seager could be the sort of final consolation prize, and hey, that's not too shabby for the 2020 offseason Mariners to help be the consolation prize for someone there.
No, I mean, the Rangers signed Todd Frazier, so we think the Rangers are done, right? Probably.
I have no clue what they're into. They have so many first basemen who can't hit well enough to play first base and cannot defend well enough to play anywhere else. So who knows?
Todd Frazier's fine. They're a weird team.
Todd Frazier's fine. But the rest of
you're higher on them than I am, but
only because their pitching is only because I think Corey Kluber is still good. But
yeah, you're higher on their pitching.
I have no goddamn clue. So I still think there's a fit, especially if it's somewhere in the National League. I think Kyle would be moved, and I don't think teams are going to look at his. Assuming the Mariners are willing to pay like half his salary, which seems reasonable. I think they can pretty easily move him and still expect something back because it's not like he's a total waste. He's still a good player. And I mean, the Braves could really use him. Like, the Braves suddenly have a solid hole. They have two different right-handed hitters, neither of whom are all that great, or at least have shown themselves to be all that great, in Camargo and Austin Riley. I think there's a good chance. I don't know. Matthew, what do you think? Do you think Kyle's going anywhere?
Put a number on that chance.
I think there's a 25% chance.
Ooh, okay. Matthew?
Which, like, yeah, there's just such a low chance anyone gets traded, but I think that's pretty good.
I don't think he's going to get traded this offseason. I could see, I mean, maybe, because things always start to, like, shake out during the actual year, so maybe, like, a team will become third baseman needy because of an injury or whatever, someone underperforming. So I could see him getting traded at the deadline, but if I had to put money on it, I don't think he gets moved before the season starts. If he does, I think it'll almost certainly be the Braves, because I could also see Kyle Seager, like, wanting to be on the Braves.
Oh my gosh, Southern boy?
Yeah, he's from North Carolina, like, that, there's not, well, I don't know quite geographically, but that's got to be one of the closest teams to where he lives.
I think it is.
Just the team of that region, too. So I feel like Kyle Seager, Brave, would just make a lot of sense
from a
personality fit. But who knows? I mean, we'll see. It's going to be weird if he does leave, because that's like him and Felix are the ones where it's like if I did see them in another jersey, it would be jarring. So I'm a little wary of that. But I think if it happens, it'll be probably for the best, because I don't know how much Kyle Seager has left in him. I think he's a good player, but I don't know if he's 3 years from now, when the Mariners are really trying to do something, if he'll still have any juice left.
Yeah. I would put the odds at under 10%, personally. I feel like it's very unlikely, but I agree with you, Matthew. I think that makes a lot of sense.
It would absolutely be weird, and it would leave us with longest tenured Seattle Mariner, Dan Altavilla, absolutely not Bonkers. Something I'm really prepared for. So, yeah, I mean, that just... I think there's a perfectly reasonable case to be made for trading Kyle Seager, so long as it's not so we can dump salary. And
absolutely,
so
that, because there's no justification. If that was the case.
Like, they're barely at $100 million as a payroll right now. They should be trying to find a way to use that money. Doesn't have to be in free agency, but at the very least, there's no excuse to like cut more.
Yeah,
we have a Twitter question actually about mid-season additions. This one comes from one Dusty Burson Moore. Thank you, Dusty, for your question. They said DePoto has hinted at some mid-season additions for this year in an interview with Shannon Dreyer. Who or what type of player do you think he would target for this season? I'm going to pose this to you guys first. You can go at it.
I mean, I'm assuming if it's like via trade, I don't know. I mean, at some point, they're probably going to have to address the outfielder pile just because there are so many of them. And if all goes well, Kelnick could be pushing for a midseason call-up. You have Kyle Lewis, you have Jake Fraley, you have Braden Bishop. I mean, it's Haniger, hopefully healthy. it's
Stolen
a lot.
Base
I mean,
champion they, Malik Smith. Also,
yes,
about
obviously
him.
Malik. So I could see then dealing one of the excess outfielders in exchange for, I don't know, maybe something that I would love to see a third base option, somebody who could potentially, who's not Patrick Wisdom, who could be third base.
Yeah. I think it's difficult to really sort of have in a framework in the mindset, because the two options are, it could be some young pitching, which is always, you always need more of that, or I think you're looking at something similar to what we're looking at right now with, like, moving Seager and one of the young outfielders to a team that has maybe a young, very, you know, is contending, has a young third base or third base capable option, but needs, you know, sort of immediate impact, you know, and something like Cincinnati, who has, you know, had made some big moves, but has, like, some prospects, or the Phillies, who, you know, I don't believe have a super solid setup necessarily throughout their infield, given all their injury history, but have some sort of prospects like Alec Baum or things like that. Obviously, that's sort of swinging big, but I think that's the type of move they'd have to look for, of, like, moving from the current roster because someone like Kelnick or Julio is tearing it up, and they have just more outfielders than they can play, to sort of shore up long-term an option in another infield spot.
I would also say, like, I think that they've got to get a sense of what role Dunn is going to play, because even though they said he's a starter, a lot of people in the industry do still see him as a reliever. I personally see him as a starter still, but the control has to come a ways. You know, he's got to have, like, a little bit, he's got to have some major league innings, I think, to kind of figure out where he falls. If Dunn is a reliever, I think they have to do something about the rotation, because you move him into the bullpen, your rotation of the future suddenly starts looking pretty thin, unless George Kirby is on a crazy Logan Gilbert-esque ascent. So that's one thing that I could maybe see them looking for. If Dunn does kind of maybe not fulfill those expectations that he's a starter, I think they'll have to look for some rotation help.
Yeah, I gotta be honest, that feels like a you know, hypothetical enough sort of discussion from Jerry that it's very difficult for me to envision, unless a ton of things are happening, just because, like, they have to play people, like, and they have to play so many people at almost every position to get a sense of who they have and what the capacity is of the players that they have. And they have to, you know, at least get, like, half more a season of J.P. Crawford and half more a season of Shed Long. And you'd want to get a full season of those guys. You want to get a full season of Jake Fraley and Kyle Lewis and, you know, all these younger players. You want to see Mitch Haniger get a full season to play so that he can show that he is actually a healthy, you know, full everyday player kind of thing. So I think it's a really tough, it would be a difficult for me to envision a lot changing other than sort of a certain type of sell move at the deadline.
Well, one thing I think that will be true no matter what is, whereas last season it was very easy to kind of, like, close your eyes in between a lot of at-bats and just wait for, like, J.P. Crawford to come up or Kyle Lewis to come up towards the end. Like,
yeah, the utility sequence.
It's going to be a lot more exciting this year because you're going to be figuring out some of these guys, you know? And Evan White's going to be up. You're going to see Evan White. You're going to see Shed Long. You're going to see J.P. Crawford. You're going to see all the young outfielders. They may not be the prettiest at bats, but they will be interesting.
We've compared it a couple times. I think this feels a little like 2013, which is not an awesome feeling in some ways, but, like, everyone who's playing is going to hopefully matter long term, and I think that that's a neat experience, and whether it works out or not, it matters what happens each time someone comes up.
Yeah, cool. Okay, great job. Let's go to an ad break real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about the Houston Astros just making a mess of themselves. Okay, we're back. Hope you enjoyed that beautiful ad break. They're all wonderful. They all help us make a little bit of money, which is fantastic for all of us. So thank you for listening. Thank you, ads. Thank you to the power of podcasts. The rest of the show will be addressing the Houston Astros cheating scandal. For anyone who somehow, some way missed it, the Astros got busted for using technology to illegally steal signs. Their coach got fired, AJ Hinch. The general manager, Jeff Luhnow, is gone. Alex Cora, who was involved, got fired from his job as the Red Sox manager. Carlos Beltran, who was involved as a player on that team, got fired as the Mets manager before coaching a single game, which
only in New York.
Very nice.
Specifically only in New York, in New York Mets.
And like, I'm trying not to like be flippant or like, I don't know. It is kind of like, oh, lol, Mets, but like also like someone lost his job, which is like usually not something to laugh at. I think if it was a different team, I would be like, oh. But since it's the Mets, it is like, haha, like you guys did it again. Congratulations. Also, now that they have an opening, Brody Van Wagenen, you have a managerial candidate sitting in your LinkedIn request by the name of Matthew Robertson. I have helped my dad coach a summer ball team. I was a great third base coach. I really connect with the youth. Noah Syndergaard, I love him, so that probably means something. And yeah, I feel like I'd be a good New York guy. So Brody, first, accept my request. Second, interview me to be the manager. And if you don't do any of that, hire Dusty Baker, I guess. I don't know.
Third, hey, come on the pod.
Or come on the pod. Yeah, we can talk this out. That's a great
debate
idea.
Debate us.
Yeah, bury the hatchet. Yeah, and debate us. So obviously, debate us. All right, Matthew, what do we got?
So, okay, I just do real quick want to echo something that lots of other people have said, which is that, like, because there was an actual, like, I don't know, physical harm done to anyone, like, I do personally, and you guys can weigh in on this.
I believe Chase DeJong would disagree with you, but okay.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yes. But what I was going to say is I still do think this whole thing is very funny. Like, it is, like, it's serious. Cheating is bad, especially when it comes at the expense of other people and carries actual consequences for them, like losing their jobs or financial gains or whatever, or Chase DeJong, who you mentioned, who had to make his MLB debut in that stadium. But a team of grown men all getting together and being like, all right, we're going to station our best guy next to a trash can and then just go apeshit on it whenever a curveball is coming. That is so funny to me. Because also, like, you got to hit that pretty hard for it to be heard all the way at the plate. So, like, there's just some guy in the Astros dugout just pounding on a trash can in, like, giant moments. I think that, like, that mental image to me is really funny. Obviously, I wish that this didn't happen. But knowing that it was, like, knowing the details of it now, like, it is hard for me not to laugh at it, which is also just, like, kind of my natural state. I always think most things are funny. So this is right in my wheelhouse, and I'm glad that we have a platform to talk about it.
It was fun to just watch baseball Twitter kind of collectively lose their shit over, you know, every wrinkle in the Astros clothing was suddenly a buzzer, a hidden buzzer device. Leading our own, the father of one of our own prospects, Nicholas Zamorelli Sr., to jokingly send us a picture of Zamorelli with a circle around his jersey. I like that we can all sort of have fun collectively at the expense of the Astros. That's been what's been most fun to me, is like, after years of just being their punching bag in the division, it's very, and not liking necessarily how they go about some things, or, you know, there's been so many questionable, like, the culture of the Astros, I think. You can argue that, yes, everybody cheats, but just the culture top down, I mean, the misogyny, the Taubman incident, the Yuli Gurriel incident in the World Series. I mean, it's just, I've had questions about their culture for a long time, so it has been extremely satisfying to just watch this all play out and just watch them continually not just be vilified by everyone, but completely trip over themselves at every possible moment, making things worse for themselves, to the point of just Alex Bregman the other day at Astros Fan Fest or whatever, just being like, well, the commissioner said what he said. Own up. You've had a lot to say. Seeing the players who have had a lot to say, Justin Verlander has had a lot to say about everything, excuse coming in 3, 2, 1. So just seeing those guys who've been big talkers not have anything to say now is, yeah, it's satisfying.
I do love that we have a villain again and that everyone can now all agree that the Astros are the bad guys. Like, I feel like there was a little period there when, like, they were the inspirational, like,
right,
oh, my
right.
God, mm-hmm. they've embraced analytics. They, like, tanked the right way, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And now it's like, okay, we can all agree that these guys suck. We hate them now.
And they got milkshake ducked real hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a trivia question for you guys real quick. Do you know, on the 2017 World Series champion Houston Astros, which pitcher threw the most innings for them?
Was it Dallas Keuchel?
It is not. It is Mike Fiers. Wow. Who did nothing
wrong. Crime time.
Mike Fiers, the hero we needed. We did get a question about this from Matt Sims at MattThe360. He wanted to know, like, what do we think about players, other MLB players, giving Mike Fiers grief for what he did, for being a whistleblower. I think we're probably all in agreement here that he did the right thing and should be applauded for it. But it is interesting to see all the players, because, like, there's that the brotherhood aspect, whatever, like, protect the shield kind of stuff where it's like, you don't do this. But I think it's important to remember, like, there's snitching, there's tattletaling, and then there's actually, like, speaking up about real injustices or wrongdoings to make sure that these wrongs are corrected and do not continue to exploit or take advantage of the people who are doing things the right way. And that's what Mike Fiers did. Like, if you see some foul shit at work, you should always say something, no matter if you work at, like, a grocery store or if you're a Major League Baseball pitcher. You know what I mean? Like, there shouldn't be some, like, code to, like, being a good person at your job. Does that make sense? Like, I don't think Mike Fiers should be vilified in any way at all.
No, I think anybody who says, like, let's deal with this in-house or let's keep it in-house, that's another way of saying, like, let's not let the public in on our dirty laundry. Like, that, and that's just, that's not transparency. That means you feel you have something to hide. Like, and moreover, putting his name on it was important because there have been whispered allegations about this stuff for years. Obviously, all these players, part of the reason why everyone went so batshit on Twitter was all these players who've been holding these feelings in forever were finally like, you know, it was like the freaking purge for a while. Everybody's just, I can say whatever I want. Putting his, the key part was putting his name on it, like putting his name to it, standing behind those allegations, not just having them be anonymous whistleblower or whatever. Because obviously these questions have been raised, and MLB, again, protect the shield, protect the institution. Like, you should never protect an institution at the expense of a person's freedom or liberty or happiness or safety and well-being. And that's why it was so important that Mike Fiers did what he did. And he's a hero. And Bob yes. Nightingale can suck it.
I think there is a degree of nuance that you can have on Fiers to say, like, he spent multiple years ostensibly benefiting from this, and then once he was, like, not benefiting from it is when he spoke out. I think that there's, you know, a bit of a sort of, not necessarily gripe there, but I think there is something to say, like, it would have been somewhat more impactful if he had spoken out in 2017 for many reasons in this same way of, like, oh, I saw this happening in our, like, in our games, and we, like, did sort of these illegal things, and I couldn't stand for it. So I do get sort of that argument from people, but the idea of, like, coming out late with information is worse than not coming out at all is worse than not coming out at all is ridiculous, because it had such a dramatic impact on tons and tons of other people. And I think there was a really good point of, like, Kate, you mentioned the sort of flimsy quotes that were being given by Bregman, and Altuve had some other similar quotes saying, like, you know, we can't control that. All we can control is playing our best and going to the World Series this year, which we think we're going to do. And essentially, you know, multiple former players saying, like, this is weak shit. Like, these are pathetic answers given the, you know, to, and yes, it might be hard to give, like, difficult answers, but, like, how many players had to answer tough questions in interviews and elsewhere after having terrible outings against the Astros that they probably didn't deserve to have because they, you know, without right. the knowledge that, like, you know, the, it's all those hidden moments that they're now just trying to ignore culpability for, especially because the entire report, for if we trust that to be accurate, said this was a player-driven, you know, scheme that was enabled by coaches and not shut down, but, like, this was y'all, and they all benefited from it. So, yeah, I think it's such a weak, like, taking advantage of sort of the player culture and that sense of camaraderie to be defended by, you know, a bunch of people who are unwilling to sort of take responsibility. And I think that is one of the worst components of this whole thing.
And I think it says a lot about mob mentality too. And like the cult, like, why wouldn't Fires speak out while he was with Astro right. as well? He would lose
it's
his
absolutely
job
it's hugely difficult. There's no denying that. But I think that you know, doing it when he did it was also really difficult, and he should be commended for it.
Right.
But I do think the heroism of it is slightly muted.
But
to
you
me
also too. See, like, AJ Hinch. I mean, he's out there busting up the monitors with a baseball bat, which I thought
that
was
is
hilarious.
One of the best things. It's amazing.
Yeah. As I mean, he's telegraphing his displeasure with the scheme, but obviously not doing enough to. Really
but he didn't,
lead.
Like, say anything, right? I mean, like, reportedly, he never said, don't do this anymore. Yeah. Like,
which, again, is, like, is I think part of that baseball cult. I mean, there's a story about Edgar Martinez taking out a baseball bat and smashing up a radio when he was unhappy about the volume at which it was being played in the clubhouse. So, you know, I think there is sort of a tradition in baseball that's nonverbal that you're maybe working against. But yeah, I just think, like, it's really difficult to make those choices, make those moral choices, when you know that something is wrong, but everyone else is doing it. And by making that choice, you're going to isolate yourself and
absolutely.
Cause a lot of problem. And, you know, eventually maybe result in job loss or I don't really fault.
There's not an easy choice. There's not an easy choice for anyone. But, yeah. I mean, that's the same thing with Hinch, right? It's, it, you know, it's like... We talked about this a little bit before, and I think he seems, by and large, like a reasonably nice, likable person. People said the same thing about Alex Cora, and also, and like, you can be a nice person, or even be like a quote-unquote good person, but like, sometimes you don't get the choice about what the situations are that you end up in, and what you end up doing in those situations is going to be how you're judged, and there's not going to be an easy choice. And the choices they made hurt a lot of people, in addition to being leading to like this ridiculous scandal, and they helped a few people, but they hurt a lot of people. Yeah. And I think that there's only so much credit you can give in that.
Yeah, they certainly helped us for content purposes, which is great.
I feel terrible for baseball, but...
Mike Fiers does receive a special shout-out in a song that I wrote that will be debuting at the end of this podcast.
Yes. So excited.
Yeah, so stay tuned to the end for that. But we got more questions we're going to run through. I like this one from James Tomlinson at Jimmy T. Tomlinson. James asks, how much does sign-stealing... actually help a hitter? I know Jake Mailhot did an in-depth look. Is Lomo telling the truth about the other teams he mentioned stealing signs, and would the Mariners have made it to the playoffs in 2014 if it weren't for the Astros cheating? So there's obviously a lot there, a lot of layers to the question, but the how much does sign stealing really help a hitter, I think is kind of fascinating, because I mean, I played baseball at a very, very young age, not on like a high level at all. But I did have one coach when I was like 10 or 11 who was obsessed with stealing signs. But that was just because like at that age, catchers are really bad at hiding them. So he'd like, he would just see the catcher's sign. And like if he called you by your first name, it was fastball. If it was called you by your last name, it was a breaking ball. Like very elementary shit. Right. But like it definitely helps. I mean, if you like hitting the ball is still insanely hard. Like as we know, it's probably the hardest thing to do in sports. But if you know what type of pitch you're trying to make contact with, it just eliminates one major concern there. So, I mean, John, do you want to weigh in on this as a former college baseball player? Were you ever caught up in any sign stealing accusations?
Yeah, never accusations, but we did have times where I've been on both sides of it, where we were pretty sure, you know, we were getting our signs picked, and basically you just kind of had to shuffle your signs up, and usually that would be enough. But you know, and I've also been the beneficiary of like, oh, we've got their signs. Pretty much the same type of thing you said was like, call out their, you know, call out first name, that's fastball, call out last name, it's off speed, you know, type of thing. And I mean, it is an unbelievably big difference. It is such a massive advantage. And I would imagine that advantage probably only grows at a big league level where the alternatives are so drastic. Like you can adjust to a D3 college breaking ball most of the time. You're not necessarily going to clobber it if you're looking fastball and you get a curveball. But like if you're expecting an 89 mile per hour slider and it's a 98 mile per hour fastball, like no, there's you just cannot really adjust. So that's such a dramatic advantage. I think a lot of the noise in sort of the data that we've looked at is that it probably wasn't an everyday thing, but that it was often enough that it made a difference. But I mean, it is a huge, huge impact if it's actually reliable and people are certain every time that it's going to be correct. If you have 100% or 99% confidence, that's such a dramatic boost.
Right.
To the is Lomo accurate point, it's something we've heard, but certainly like we don't have like confirmation, oh yeah, definitely the Yankees are stealing signs, like the Red Sox, the Dodgers are doing this illegally also. It's not the first place that like it's been rumored, but no one's gone on the record in the same way that fires did, right? So like that is the big difference there, is no one has gone on without a doubt to say like, yep, this is how they did it, I was there, and there's no way to avoid it. I believe, let's see, in 2014 the A's beat out the Mariners.
Yes, by one game.
If we're just looking at it from a direct head-to-head component, the Astros were 8-11 against Oakland and 9-10 against Seattle that year. So I don't know that was really explicitly the difference.
Yeah, if they were cheating, they were doing it badly. I mean, they ended with a winning with a 4-32 winning record. So
yeah, I will say they did fire their coach mid-season, so perhaps that was the difference. Because they fired Bo Porter, who you guys may recall as the main unfortunate soul who had to coach the majority of the rebuilding Astros. I don't know if you guys remember this. I certainly did not. The name of the manager they brought in the interim to finish up that season was a fellow named Tom Lawless. So I think if we're looking for some heavy-handed imagery, we may have found our guy.
That's like, just wrote my first ever fictional story, and I'm not good at naming characters yet.
This is not foreshadowing. This is for lighting.
I'm like, pretty sure, though, Tom Lawless, I think, has one of the OG bat flips in the playoffs. He's the one, I think he's the guy who, like, carries his bat almost all the way to first base in the World Series and then flips it. Like, it's a really cool bat flip, but it's like, long time ago. Like, the video that you'll find of it is very blurry.
Looks like the Zapruder film.
Yeah, big tight pants era. Nice. But he flips the shit out of it. So if Tom Lawless was the guy who started the cheating thing, then boo him. But if he was just the guy who took the job and was teaching the players how to do bat flips, then I think I'm cool with Tom Lawless.
Yeah, I think anything in 2014, if we're blaming the Mariners not going to the playoffs, it's the team itself, which, as I seem to remember, kind of cratered towards the second half. I mean, I can look at the win-loss record right up here, I guess. And also that damn Athletics devil magic. Like, it's just so often, I feel like that is just, we're going to be cursed with them for all time. Like, just the plucky little A's pulling themselves out of nowhere and scooting into the wild card spot that belongs to the Mariners. So they're the villains in this scenario, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you guys, this is another question from at Shut Your Dumb Face on Twitter. with the unwritten retaliation rules in baseball, what do you think the rest of the league has in store for Astros hitters? I'm extremely curious about this because obviously you would think that pitchers are going to throw at the Astros, as has been done for years. I mean, you can catch a fastball to the ribs.
Mike Clevenger has basically threatened it openly on Twitter, which is not a great look for him.
Also, yeah, Mike Clevenger is a wild boy. Yeah. He posted that video of him getting a tattoo in, like, a dark room with fucking fronts on his teeth. Like, yeah, there's going to be blood. Like, I don't know if I like him yet, but, like, that video
told me a lot. I don't know what sport Mike Clevenger thinks he's in. I appreciate him trying to bring some savagery into baseball, I guess. But it's just, like, you are a white kid nicknamed Sunshine. Like,
And his Twitter is all, like, peace and love, man, and, like, a lot of flower and sunshine emojis. And then he's like, they should be ashamed to show their face around me, those motherfuckers.
Clevenger really took, like, a turn this season, kind of like an emo kid in high school or something who suddenly turns into, like, a death metal, like, rager. Like, he's just, he seems to be trying on identities, and so he's traded in the kind of the happy hippie thing for this, like, I don't know. I mean, it's cute. You keep on finding yourself, Mr. Clevenger.
It's a classic. The Astros are the first person to hurt him, and now he's mad. He's gone from being sad about no one paying attention to him to now someone does pay attention to him, and they broke him, so now he's upset about it. But I think, okay, so on the retaliation thing, like, I think if this news had broke during the season, like, and the Astros had to play the next day, I think there would almost certainly be, like, a full-on fight.
The fact that
an entire offseason will have elapsed kind of makes me think that the anger will subside at least a little bit. Like, there's going to be some pitchers who are just going to do it no matter what. But I think that the fact that there's, like, 5 months to think about this, or I guess 3-4 months, whatever, people are going to be a little more measured, I would imagine. And I'm sure these guys will talk to each other, too. Like, I'm sure a lot of pitchers are, like, that have friends or former teammates on the Astros will talk to them and they'll figure it out. But I mean, there will be something, but I don't think it's going to be like every single game, or like it's going to be like an ongoing issue where the league has to step in. Like, there'll be a couple, but I don't think it's going to be like a dominant narrative throughout the season.
I kind of think the other way. Yeah. Kate, go ahead.
It's 3 months to stew on this, which.
Yeah. 3 months to plan. 3 months to like plan out, okay, who can we afford to get suspended when? Let's look at this. Let's chart out this schedule. Like, when are we playing the Royals so we can like afford to miss this dude for a start or two? Like,
yeah.
I think it is going to be I think Altuve and Bregman in particular.
Oh, yeah.
Correa maybe as well. I mean, the guys, you know, the guys who have been there forever, like, I think those guys are in for a rough season unless, and like, what will happen is that's going to be it for like maybe the first week. And then the league is going to come out and have to like make a statement.
Oh, I think the league will do something in advance of. I think there's probably a memo being sent around to the clubs. Maybe not as we speak, but very soon. Like, we will be monitoring this, will be heavier than usual fines and punishments, suspensions given out.
Which they should, because it's not. it's not cool. Like, no, it shouldn't be, you know, okay. Road justice. You know, yeah. Like, Mike Clevenger coming out here with the, you know, exactly, with, like, his 95-mile-per-hour fucking sinkers or whatever, like, coming at kneecaps. Like, that. It's just not the right way to do it. Like, it is way, way fucked up. But also, like, that is not going to help to like, do essentially a bunch of crime, have the cops come in and punish some people. It's like it is like reverse sort of normal crime, where it's like all the like higher ups got punished, but none of the like actual like low level crime people got in trouble. And then like the cops are now saying, well, now don't do anything bad to these poor young folks. Like, they weren't really, you know, just because we didn't punish them at all doesn't mean you can take it into your own hands. Like, that is not going to play well in the way that baseball players and fans are. Like, that is, it is just going to be constant rage, yeah. I think, anytime they, because, you know, like, not everyone plays them as often as the Mariners do. So, like, a lot of weeks,
there's going to be a lot of energy people's being only brought time. Into stadiums by fans. That's not
right.
And that this could is our time to too.
Get them. Like, I'm actually more psyched about like what fans are going to bring. I hope fans get like, you know, like the A-Rod money, you know, Monopoly money thing. I hope fans.
Oh yeah.
Are bringing buzzers, like,
absolutely
all sorts of stuff like that. That would be, that's what I'm most excited for.
Yeah, I think one of my hottest/dumbest takes is that this whole thing is actually good for baseball because it's just going to drum up interest. Like, baseball needed something to get people talking about it in the off season and to like have an actual story that's not just Mike Trout is good. You know what I mean? Like, this is, I think this will, like, maybe not positive is the right word, but it's going to at least be good for like ratings and content and all that stuff that like the people on the internet care about. Let's go to another question. This is from at Patrick J. Burke 84. The Astros have loads of talent and egos. Facts. Assuming they will be mercilessly hated on every Astros road game. Assuming they will be mercilessly hated on in every road game, does this stand a better chance of galvanizing them back to the World Series or fracturing them? I think everything I know about the Astros and this group of cheaters tells me that it will galvanize them. And we've seen it from Bregman in that interview. Like, I also feel like we all just know shitty men who get called out on their shit, and then that only validates it. You know what I mean? Like, giving the problem a name kind of proves to them that they're seen and they exist and they like the attention of it. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, you have a cocaine problem. And the dude's like, oh, my God, thank you for noticing. I didn't think anyone noticed. And they just keep doing mountains of cocaine. Like, men love doing bad things for the sheer sake of doing them because men are children. So I think that's just going to continue. You know what I mean?
No arguments here.
I think that I agree. I do think that it's an unfortunate sort of side effect of this, that this is going to be the worst Astros team in the last few years. Like, they still probably are going to be right in there for the AL West title. They might even go to the, you know, to the championship series and might even go to the World Series. But, like, they're naturally going to be worse. They lost the best pitcher on their team. Sorry. Well, sorry, not sorry, Justin Verlander. But, like, they lost Gerrit Cole. Like, they're just going to be worse naturally. So I think they can be galvanized as much as they want by their sort of united shittiness. It's still not going to be as good of a team. And I don't know that that will be recognized as such, or if people will be like, oh, the hangover of being accused, when it's like, no, they don't have
Gerrit Cole.
They don't have Gerrit Cole, exactly.
The thing that's gonna suck, though, everyone prepare yourselves for the Astros to go full like victim mode, like, oh my God, they tried to bring us down, but we're back.
Ultimate, nobody believes in them. Nobody believes in them. That's true.
To that point, I would like to share with you a Twitter thread that I read yesterday that I forgot to share in our LL Slack for us to mercilessly dunk on. But it's from a fellow named Anthony B. at Ephus Tosser. People want to know why Astros fans are so arrogant. So us versus the world. well, you made us that way, is how it starts. And then he, right. And then he kind of goes through this whole thing about, whoa, the Astros had such a hard time, and Drayton McLean was trying to create a valuable asset to sell, not strip them down, but they were bad, the farm team was awful, Jim Crane came in, he saved them, Lunau, they, you know, they turned around, and then he gets to, I and other bloggers churned out articles on players in places like Davenport, Iowa, and Lancaster, California, and they were read with enthusiasm usually reserved for MVP candidates. Meanwhile, the jokes kept pouring in. We built up calluses over the battle scars. As the process unfolded and the team got good, all of that laughing turned to resentment. Astros fans, tired of being laughed at, savored their victory lap. They leaned into the chance to bully the bullies, and the bullies pretended to be shocked by it. And then he's like, wow. Yeah, and then we won, and we won. The payoff was this was winning the championship. Now the bullies are trying not to win out back from us, but to complain to the teacher and have it stripped. And we run our hands over those calluses, and we remember the taunts. And no one is more betrayed by the cheating scandal than the Astros fans. I mean, I would say the people who got cheated against are maybe the most betrayed, but...
Here's what I'll say. There is, like, a type of Astros fan I absolutely have sympathy for. Because, like, if you did really believe in the team, and then you now feel betrayed and you're pretty heartbroken, yeah, that sucks. I would feel pretty gutted if I was, like... I mean, there were things before this that the team did that was gutting, but, like, it would be gutting, but...
I mean, I would say as a female fan of the Astros, those are the ones I maybe had the most sympathy for when they brought Osuna on, because, you know, they didn't sign up for that.
Right. Yeah, but no, you're not the Joker, the baseball team.
That whole thread is, like, the Joker. Yeah, we remember the calluses.
I'm also worried that like Yordan Alvarez is going to spend the whole offseason just getting enormous to be like the designated fighter. Like
he's
going to be like the hockey
enforcer. Yeah. He's going to grow a third arm. Just
yeah, he's going to be the guy. Like you said, other teams are going to be ready to fight, and the Astros are just going to have Yordan Alvarez like on the top step of the dugout. Like, no, you don't want to do that.
who's the dude who got into a knife fight on their team a couple years ago? They can bring him back.
Oh yeah, the prospect who threatened one of his teammates with a knife. They've cut him, but you know who knows
the new. That means he's available.
The new Joker Astros.
Come on now.
If only there were some clues that the Astros may be the most upstanding organization.
Had an organizational culture problem. I mean, I think that there is going to be like it's always been us against the world. We're the underdog. Like they have. Sold that narrative pretty well in Houston for years, and
I mean that's every team, right? Like that, but like you know,
nobody has ever believed.
Not every team gets then accused of systematic cheating, like
right?
No,
for sure, us against the world is a common sports fan trope, I think, but I do wonder if there's going to be just a doubling because that was the choice for fans, right? For a lot of fans, it was either. And starting way back with the Osuna stuff, like, or the Gurriel stuff, if you want to go even further, you could say, this is bad, and I feel bad about supporting the team, and, you know, now I have to ask questions about whether I can or not. Or you could just double down and be like, well, they didn't really do anything that wrong, and blah, 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 blah. And I think you see a lot of fans go in that direction. And so they're going to have a very, like, vocal fan base that they're going to draw strength from and whatever. But I do think that it'll take a toll on them to go and just be universally booed at every single ballpark for a while. I don't see how that cannot take a little bit of a mental toll on you to just be constantly ragged on. So,
I mean, I'll be honest, like, to the, it's the villain thing. I think that when people are coming to games with, like, a united purpose of, like, not only are we, like, rooting for our team, we are vehemently rooting against the team that's being played. Like, the idea that, like, throughout the game it is going to be almost constant booing whenever they are on the road is really exciting to me. Like, there's that level of engagement and, like, pissed off passion that I think baseball does great with, because you do have so many games and it's easy to take some off. But like, this is like, people are going to be furious, and rightly so, and I'm psyched for that. Like, just psyched for that atmosphere here. And I do think that that will take a toll, because that's just tough to build up. It's going to be weird.
Totally. Let's tie a bow on this with a question that's somewhat about the Mariners, from Nick Tucker at NickTuck3. With the loss of picks and soon a new GM, where do you see the Astros in terms of competition once the Mariners start reaching their own potential for contention around 2022/2023? Boy, those are weird years to say. I mean, it certainly does not help the Astros to lose draft picks. I still think, like, the draft picks are, like, it is going to affect their future, but at the end of the day, like, they still won the World Series and have two AL pennants, so, like, I don't know. I think that that is, like, a fair punishment, but at the same time, like, they got what they wanted, you know? They won, right? They won the World Series. So I have to think, too, though, kind of like what you guys were saying about in that last question about how it will take a mental toll. Like, I would imagine that once these players hit free agency, they're going to want to leave. Like, I don't see why you'd want to still be part of the Astros at this point. I mean, maybe everyone thinks differently, and, like, a lot of guys will have loyalty to the club, but I'm thinking, like, I'd be looking for any reason to get out of there and not get booed at every stadium, you know? I guess, too, with, like, Altuve and Bregman, they'll just carry that everywhere they go. But, I mean, I think that if I was the Astros, I would be very, very, very scared about what the next decade is going to look like, both from, like, a perception standpoint and from their actual talent on the field.
I think that, and even building further on it, something that actually, just thinking about this, like, I've been pretty pissed that it was not enough of a sort of punishment to sort of push another team to not do this. And I do still think that's the case. But I will say, like, especially for the first team, for Houston, like, unless a lot more of this comes out, like, what major free agent is saying, I want to go play for that team, you know, when... And join sort of that whole culture in the next, in like 2021 or 2022, like when the Mariners should hopefully be going to, like, they're going to be getting worse naturally anyway. And they're going to be the most reviled team in the league still. Like, it's just not, I cannot imagine that they are able to, they essentially have been a place where people wanted to go because they saw how players got so much better. And that was arguably like a sort of understated advantage that they had of their success, like that their success would continue to breed more success. And now I think it's entirely swung the opposite direction of, like, they're going to have a hard time luring people there. So I think that they are going to be in a real tough way by the 2021-2022 stretch.
Right, other than the natural, like you were saying, like, just naturally, if you look at the latest
I mean, Verlander will be 39 or whatever.
Right, but if you look at the latest farm system rankings from Baseball America, I mean, they don't have a lot of great things to say about the Astros system. It is largely, and that's why I would have liked to see them get penalized with some international spending too, because it does, it's going to hurt them to sit out these next two drafts, mostly because they shape up to be pretty strong drafts. But honestly, the Astros are picking at the back of the they're picking at the back of the first round anyway. They're not picking now at all, but, you know, the combined loss of those picks, I think what I saw valued was like, what, $10 million?
In terms of the lost value?
Yeah.
I think it's like somewhere in the 25 to 40 million.
Okay. So
if it's,
I mean, painful.
But like, that's the value. Like, you know, that's, but who knows necessarily on that. That's sort of an estimated draft pick value.
So it's definitely going to sting them. But again, it's only 2 years. So and they still
and
can build,
and they'll
in
get
rounds.
A qualifying pick. They'll get comp picks.
They will for losing Cole, and yeah. So I mean, it's not as much punishment as I want to see, but the farm system is down. I mean, they've lost pretty much all their stars off the farm. Anyone they sign now out of the DR will be years coming, or, you know, internationally, whatever they do. It's going to take years to develop. So, and that's, you know, maybe one if they go all in to try to prize like a superstar out of the IFA. So we'll see.
And they're very rarely sort of a team at the top of.
That's true. They're not. I mean, they're going to have to shift that strategy, I think, if they're not going to have access to top talents mm-hmm. in the draft for the next 2 years.
Right.
So we'll probably see some realigning of mm-hmm. how they've approached their IFA fight. Although, you know, the Astros believe that they can develop talent out of anyone, and so far they have. So we'll see. I am still a little scared about their development. Yes. But I'm not as scared about it as, like, I think other teams have closed that gap pretty significantly. The Astros are...
And they've lost a lot of the, like, most important, you know,
the architects of that, yeah.
Great job. Once again, we crushed it, everyone. We crushed it. I do have a confession. I was, folks, wearing a buzzer that would ring every time it was my turn to talk. I do apologize for that.
That's why your transitions were always right on the money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, if you're not cheating, you're not trying. That's what I've always said. And that applies to the baseball diamond and to the podcast world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are about done, but we're going to leave you with the world premiere of a smash hit by Matthew Robertson called Before He Cheats, Houston Astros Remix. So get ready for that, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Right now, he's probably bang scheming with Hinch and Cora, and they know that this is cheating. Right now, they're probably thinking of some stupid little lie, cause they can't play fairly. Right now, they're probably up on Twitter with fake accounts talking about we still love the Astros. And Jeff Luno. They use the screen to steal some signs with a little bit of help from clubhouse guys. Altuve said, don't rip off my jersey. There was a small little buzzer in their home whites. Thank you to my man Mike Fires. Maybe next time they'll think before they cheat. Right now, they're probably out trashing the high-def version of every single series. Right now, they're probably thinking I'm fucked, and we're thinking this is gonna get ugly. Right now, they're probably working on replacing all of those trash cans, oh no. And Jeff Luno. Screen to steal some signs with a little bit of help from clubhouse guys. Altuve said, don't rip off my jersey. There was a small little buzzer in their home whites. Thank you to my man Mike Fires. Maybe next time they'll think before they cheat. They even made a little trouble in the Mets world. And the next time that they cheat, oh, pray for old MLB. Oh, MLB. And they use the screen to steal some signs with a little bit from clubhouse guys. Altuve said, don't rip off my jersey. There was a small little buzzer in their home wives. Thank you to my man Mike Fires. Maybe next time they'll thank before they cheat. Oh, maybe next time they'll thank before they cheat.